So thank you, Gil. I just feel so much caring and kindness in the way IRC is handling this whole COVID. So thank you so much. Brings a sense of safety and reassurance. And there's that honesty, right? Beautiful. So we meet again in this wondrous field of Dhamma. And just in kind of preparing what I was going to say, and I said, well, how can I kind of just ground myself and get ready to speak? And there's these ancient, humongous redwoods right in the balcony with the treehouse. And I just went over and I grabbed one. And I just put my hands on it. And I smelled it. And it was just like the ancient groundedness of that tree just flowed through me. You know, we were one. Our energetic field was one. And I was just like, ancient one, just give me your strength and your calmness, right? Those trees are like, they're just like watching over. It feels like they're watching over this whole land that they're on. And they just feel so strong, you know? So I just asked for that strength from a tree. You know, and it's just such a blessing to just tune in, you know, tune in to what's here around us. So sacred. So then I went and I walked around the front, and there was these gorgeous red flowers. I mean, they're gorgeous. And I put my face to it, and I just took in that beautiful flower energy into my being, into my heart. So beautiful. And then there were purple ones. So I kept on walking, and there's some purple ones that are really, the stamen inside is all like hooks. Like, look at this creation of, you know, spirit. It's incredible, you know. So I was just soaking that in, letting all of that just fill my essence and my heart. And I felt good. You know, I felt like I'm home. And so there's so many ways that we could center and ground ourselves if we open up, you know, if we open up our hearts. Just being with all of you, you know, is such a blessing. How many times do we get to be with people that are sincere in their effort of practice, you know, that are really trying to, you know, to walk a path of truth and of righteousness and of peace and of calm and love? It's very rare, you know, when we think about the way the world is right now. So again, I'm just soaking in the blessing of being with y'all and just, you know, knowing that we're here for, you know, a beautiful aspiration together, and that this beautiful setting has been brought by the volunteers that work here so hard and by the teachers that hold this space. And this is an energy field that we're in. This is the Dhamma field, right? So it's just wonderful to soak in the Dhamma field. You know, as Gil was talking the other night, we're filling in all the empty spaces so that nothing else can get in. So this is a beautiful space to do that. So in that respect, how are we doing? How are we doing right in this moment, right now? So taking a pause, I call them sacred pauses. So we're going to just take a pause. Check in. Check in with the body. How's the body doing right now? Doing any kind of movements that you need just to settle in? Noticing what's in the attitude of the mind. Just noticing what's the internal weather, the internal landscape. What does it feel like right now? And everything is welcome. There's nothing wrong. There's no wrong answer. Everything here is welcome. Whatever's there could be fatigue, could be interest, could be calm, could be joy, could be agitation. I mean, anything is possible and it's all okay. Right? It's all okay. Just breathing into whatever's there. And this is that sacred pause, just checking in, you know, stopping. In life, we can get so, so busy and so much into the doing that we forget how we're being with the doing. So just taking that sacred pause every now and then, even during our life outside, and checking in, stopping, and saying, what's happening right here, right now? You know, how's my heart? How's my body? This is always available to us, coming into presence. This is the practice. Coming into presence as a source of refuge, as a source, a resource to handle all the ups and downs of life. Such a blessing to be able to do this. So tonight, I was going to go through the last. We did 1, 2, 3 foundations of mindfulness. This is the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And for some reason, I always pick the mindfulness that has the most parts in it. Everybody else just had mind or feelings. I had body with 6 parts. This one has 5 parts, you know. So, again, I'm just going to kind of zero in on what I feel is the essence of it. So the fourth foundation has 5 categories. It's called Investigation of the Dhammas, Pali word Dhamma. And these are just different objects of mind, objects of experience. And there's 5 particular categories to this particular foundation. So it includes the 5 hindrances, the 5 aggregates, the 6 sense bases, the 7 factors of awakening, and the 4 noble truths. So it's quite packed in. So there's no way that I can do all of that. But I think the essence of this foundation is basically what leads to awakening and what takes us away from awakening. That's just the bottom line. And I always come back to the basic teaching of the Buddha. He taught one thing: suffering and the end of suffering. And this basically, this foundation talks to just that, you know, what leads us to awakening, to liberation from suffering, and what keeps us tied in to suffering. And this is what this foundation seems to be about for me. I was reading Venerable Anilayo's book. He wrote 3 books on the Satipatthana. And he's a scholar. He's a very great scholar of Buddhism. He knows, I don't know how many languages, so many languages. He's a German monk. He lives over in Massachusetts. Wonderful person, wonderful human being, very warm, and has so much knowledge of the Dhamma. But he's always kind of, he's a scholar, you know, so he studies all of this. So he studied the Pali Canon, and then he also studied the Chinese canons, 2 of the Chinese canons. And he basically said that what's the most, what is most common about all 3 of them were the 7 factors of awakening and the hindrances. So I'm kind of just going to touch on those 2. He said those are the most prevalent in the Chinese and in the Pali versions. So just to review kind of like where we've been, so we started with foundation number 1, which was the body, the breath, the temple that we enter through, the temple of the body, embodiment, embodied awareness. So we keep on coming back to this practice of embodied awareness. So how are we listening right now? How are we aware of our bodies while we even listen, while we're receiving my words? Just checking in again, you know, to just kind of feel the embodiment of sitting and listening, right? So you were listening and we're embodied both at the same time. So we entered through that, through the breath and the body. Then we went into Vedana, which is the feeling tone, Gil took us through the pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant or unpleasant. And then we went into, Nisha gave us a beautiful discourse on the mental states. So we investigated those, whether they're present, they're not present, checking in the mind to see what's present. And knowing that it's all practice, that it's all nature arising, that there's no right and wrong mental state, it's just recognizing what's arising is the important thing. So we went through the mental states, and then now we come to the fourth foundation. So in this particular foundation, what is important, it's, again, Gil had spoken about the conditions that were always kind of planting these conditions so that awakening could arise, right? So we're looking in this foundation, we're looking at the conditions for the arising, for certain factors for the arising, and also the other way around, so that the factors that don't, the tendencies that don't need to rise, that block awakening, we kind of look at that. So we're going to look at both sides. What needs to be, well, let's, I like to look at analogy of a seed. So what seeds need to be planted and watered so they can grow, which are the factors of awakening. And then there's the hindrances which get in the way of awakening. They're part of nature. They will arise. And we spoke about that yesterday with Nisha. They're part of our experience, and we all have it, but they get in the way of awakening. So it's good to notice them, see how they rise, feel their texture, get to know them so that we can clear out some of the stuff that we're holding and allow these other factors of awakening to happen. So it's just looking at those conditions that we're setting up. And for me, like I said, I like the analogy of seeds. For some reason, it's just beautiful to think of the awakening factors that seeds we're watering. So we don't want to water the seeds of the hindrances, definitely not. But we want to be aware that they're there, because what happens if we don't notice the hindrances, right? They're in the background. They're pushing us, pulling us in our lives, and we're not aware. We're not even aware. So the awareness of the hindrances is so important, to just notice if they're there or if they're not there, which is what Nietzsche was covering yesterday. So many of you already are familiar with the hindrances. Sensual desire, there's five of them. Sensual desire, anger, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. So those are the five hindrances traditionally in Buddhism. That's what we refer to. And the thing is, yes, to recognize them, how they arise, the conditions that lead to their arising, and the conditions that lead to their removal. So we're looking at the conditions around that, around the hindrances. And I think I spoke to a few of you. One of my favorite images and reminders about the hindrances is when the Buddha on the day of his awakening, when he sat under the Bodhi tree. And it wasn't that he wasn't being accosted by these hindrances. You know, he was being accosted by these different hindrances in the form of Mara. You know, the story goes that Mara was accosting him with all of these different hindrances. And he touched the earth, right? The earth is my witness. I see you. You can't fool me anymore. And for me, that's such a strong image, because that's what it is to see it and realize that it's empty. You can't fool me anymore. You know, you can't fool me anymore. And that's such a powerful thing to be able to recognize and to touch the earth. Say, I see you. So the seeing is so powerful. You know, that's why we always, when somebody says, oh, I have restlessness, I have doubt, and you'll always hear the teacher say, that's great. You know, it's like, it doesn't sound right that we're saying it's great, but it's really great because you're seeing it. You know, and if you're not seeing it, then delusion is happening, right? You're being pushed around by this force that you don't even see. So it's so important to just notice it, you know, and that's what this is the great time in a retreat that we can begin to notice some of these hindrances and how they work. So there's a beautiful analogy that the sutras use about the hindrances. So sensual desire, there's an image first. Let me back up a little bit. The clear mind is often referred to like clear water. You know how when you look into a pool of water and it's totally clear, you could see all the way to the bottom. It's just beautiful, clear water. So that's a clear mind. With the hindrances, let's say if there's sensual desire, the analogy is mixed with dyes. Like there's all these beautiful different colored dyes in the water. So it's not clear anymore, but it's filled with all of these beautiful colors. So you get mesmerized, right, by the desires and the cravings, and you get pulled in. So that's the analogy with sensual desire. With anger, it's boiling water. You know, the image of boiling water. And that's what anger feels like. It feels like boiling water. Dullness, sloth, and torpor is overgrown with algae. So could you imagine a clear pond has all this algae? As the sloth and torpor is like a dullness of the mind, a sinking mind. So the algae is covering this beautiful, clear mind. Restlessness is stirred by the wind. You know how when you're looking at a pond or anything and you see all that wind rustling up the top and you see all that, that's restlessness. And it kind of feels like that. It's just that, you know, choppy water. And doubt is muddied water. You know, things are not clear. It's placed in the dark. It's muddy. So you can't really see clearly. That's doubt. So these are kind of analogies that the clear water being that it's just clear, you could see right through it, the clear mind that has none of these obstructions. And then we have these analogies of different things that you can kind of even get a feel for them, you know, just by the analogy with the different types of water. So the craving, sensual desire, Nisha talked about that. So sometimes when I think of the beauty of, you know, all those dyes and, you know, you just want it. Sometimes I think of all that glitters is not gold. You know, sometimes it's so, I remember one time I came out of a retreat and I was pretty calm, concentrated, and I was coming home and I stopped in like a variety store and it might have been a long retreat that I did. I was coming home. And when I went into the store, first of all, my eyes went joop, you know, they just like all the different colors and plus the store was stocked to the brim. I mean, and the potato chips were all filled up and the chocolates and all the beverages. And then they even had a jewelry rack with earrings, which I love, you know, so it was like my eyes just went joop right out there, the eye door, craving, you know, it was like. And you know, sometimes how you don't even know what you want, but you're looking for something to crave. In other words, what can I get? You know, and that pulling, you know, it's like an energetic pulling. And then of course, our world is made, you know, to catch you, right? That's what advertising is all about. You need this. Do you really need, you know, 3 cars in your garage? You need the latest computer. You need the latest telephone. And we get all caught up in this madness, you know, and people are making billions with getting us addicted to craving. So it's really such an important thing out in the world. And then it shows up, you know, on retreat, just little things like craving a brownie, you know, or let me take 2. Nobody's looking. Let me see if I can get 2 of them. Nobody's, you know, I've been on a retreat like that. I'm saying, knock away, put away another one. You know, and I could feel the greed and the, you know, the grasping and the clinging going on, or the craving for things to be a certain way. That's, of course, the big one. You know, we want conditions just to be perfect, and then I could meditate. or I want this perfect situation. I want this perfect cushion, and then I could finally relax. You know, so we always want. And it's interesting to notice, you know, with that wanting and that pulling to stay. It's very energetic. You know, I remember one time, it was right before lunch. It was like the half hour sit before lunch. And I already smelled the food, you know, from, I was upstairs and I smelled the food and I was hungry. So I even got a headache, you know, just feeling that pull of me wanting to get down to the food. And I remember I had an interview with Joseph and he said, well, Nakwe, have you experienced craving on this retreat? And I told him about it. We started laughing. I said, I even got a headache with the craving, you know. So there's so many ways that we could just notice it. So we get familiar with the way that it catches us, right? The dyes, all those dyes in the water get so mesmerizing and we get pulled in, you know. So it's good to just recognize this, how it happens on retreat and how it happens out in the world. It's really, really the root of suffering, a lot of suffering. So anger, of course, is the boiling water, and that is an aversion, right? We don't like something, we don't want it. So that's anger starts to arise. Something, so somebody's acting in a manner that we don't like. Something's not happening the way we want it to happen. Conditions are not the way we wanted, so we can get angry, you know. And sometimes anger could be justified in a way, you know, with all the stuff that's going on in our world. You know, sometimes we get angry, you know, it's like, this is really messed up. And anger could be a calling to do, you know, to look at the anger, to hold it, and let it transform, because anger in itself, to take it out into the world, just causes more problems, right? So we can hold the anger, and in Buddhism we say transform it to compassion, you know, and then go out and do what we have to do out in the world if there's something that we're angry about. So transformation of anger through practice is very powerful, and anger is a teacher, you know, it's trying to tell you something, trying to have you look at something. So it's a very powerful teacher. And here it's compared to boiling water. And I'm sure all of us, and this is universal, right? I mean, we all have gone through this. It's not like just me going through this. I love the way Nisha talked about delusion, you know, that we just think we're suffering with this. Everybody, you know, we all have gone through anger. We all have gone through clinging and craving. So anger, boiling water, it feels like it. Sometimes it feels like a match to me. I could feel it going, shh. And I could feel the heat in my body as the anger, you know. So it's a manifestation that we could feel in the body and in the mind, you know. So this is another area of investigation of how it arises. Dullness is just that kind of like a sinking feeling. And I'm sure you probably have felt that on this retreat. So it can happen, definitely. And even outside, it could happen, you know, in our lives. But it's a sloth and torpor. So it has to do with sinking. And here it's related with overgrown with algae. You know, there's just that algae all over. And it just feels thick. You know, you just, the energy is really down. So different ways of working with that energy is through the breath. You can stand up, sometimes going walking outside, you know. Sometimes you need to sleep, you know. Sometimes it's sinking, but that is sleepiness is a different thing. And sometimes you have to sleep and take a nap. But sometimes it could be that you're avoiding something in your, something's coming up and it's a way of avoiding. So you can just investigate it and see in your experience when you get that sinking energy. But that's related to algae. And then there's restlessness and worrying. You know, that choppiness stirred, the water stirred by the wind. And that happens, you know, to all of us again, restlessness and worrying. In fact, restlessness is like according with the Theravada and with the stages of awakening, it doesn't go away till the very end. So it's kind of like it'll be there for a while. The thing is to recognize it and to steady it, you know, with the breath, with coming back into presence. Because especially with worrying, you know, many of us worry about the future of possible things that could happen. Usually worry is about something unknown in the future that you're making up a story about how it may go and you're worrying about it. So worrying, again, it is stirred by the wind. You know, it's very kind of agitated. So again, we just want to hold it, and by the different ways that we've been talking about working with these different energies. Doubt. Quite a few people actually came to the interviews with doubt. And it's wonderful to recognize it. Joseph Goldstein talks about it as the great wisdom, imposter of wisdom. You know, because all of a sudden, this little voice will come in your head. Well, maybe this isn't the best thing for me to do right here, meditate. Or maybe this isn't working. Or maybe I'm not good enough. You know, that's another, I don't think I could do this because I'm not good enough. And all of these doubts start coming up. You know, this is for monks. This is not for me, you know. And we start creating all these different doubts, you know, about our ability, about are we good enough? We're not good enough, or we're too good enough, or, you know, it's always about me, and, you know, what is good for me, and what I'm not able to do, and all of this. So the doubting mind, it can get very sticky, you know, because if you keep on kind of dwelling in there, it just kind of sinks you into more doubt, because the mind starts spinning off, right? So again, embodiment and coming into presence and just having faith, you know, that the path you're on, you're traveling it, you're practicing, you're doing what you're here to do, you know, and just saying, oh, this is doubt. You know, sometimes just a little label, that really helps. Like sometimes I'll just say to myself, this is doubt. This is what you experience. And I don't proliferate on thinking about it. I just give it a little label and I let it go. This is doubt. And for some reason that helps just to clarify it for me. So it's a little bit clearer. Oh, this is anger. Okay, this is what's going on. This is confusion. Sometimes I just feel confused, right? So I just a little label. Oh, this is confusion, Akawai. This is what you're feeling. So just a little label sometimes helps to clarify it, but in that, again, not to proliferate into, you know, going into a story about it. Just seeing what it is and then coming back to your practice. That's the main thing with the hindrances. So there's nothing wrong. It's part of the nature of the mind. That's the first thing that Nisha was talking about yesterday. Really important. There's nothing wrong. We all go through this. I mean, nobody could raise their hand and say they have not felt restlessness in their life or even in this retreat. So it's just a common thing. You know, this is the way the mind works. This is the way human nature is. You know, so it's just to know that this is a normal thing and that it's part of being human. That's the thing about it. It's part of being human and it's part of nature. So again, we'll take a pause. How's your body? Checking in. How are the words landing? Just checking in. How are you listening? This is the pause, the sacred pause. It's nice to get used to doing it. It really helps. So the hindrances cloud the mind. So a lot of times, you know, if they show up in meditation, they cloud the mind so you can't really see clearly. So it's good to get to know them. By getting to know them, then they're familiar and you'll know, you know, okay, this is what's happening right now. Instead of getting lost in it and, you know, really getting entangled in it, you want to just recognize it and then continue on with your practice. And then the other side of it is the seven factors of awakening. And these particular factors lead on to liberation. So the hindrances lead away from liberation, and then the seven factors lead on to liberation. So I'll just name them. And of course, the first one is mindfulness, investigation, which we talked a lot about in this retreat, energy, joy. There we go, joy. See, on the path to liberation, joy, how important. Tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. Those are the seven factors of awakening. And these are the seeds that need to be watered, right? So we've been watering the seed of mindfulness. And this, and these factors are, they're, in a way, we all have them already. They're already, you know, part of our mindscape. We're just kind of building them up, right? Watering them, making them stronger so that they can flower and grow on this path to liberation. So mindfulness, we have been really exploring that and trying to develop that continuity of mindfulness. And no matter what we, what position, what activity we're doing, we're just building that continuity. And when we're sitting, meditating, that continues on. And this is leading us onward. You know, very clearly the Buddha said, this is on the path to liberation, mindfulness. Investigation, another thing that he pointed to leading to the path of awakening. So that curiosity, you know, what's this? What is, what's going on right here, right now? And being able to see how it affects the body, how it affects the mind, and working with investigation of the Dhamma is very important. And that also rises, and once we start to investigate whatever arises, that starts to produce energy. We start to get interested. There's like an interest that happens. It's called virya, energy. And that's the third factor. So investigation kind of starts to get your curiosity up, and the energy starts to build there because you're curious, you're investigating, you're seeing how it's work in the mind and the body, and you're learning new things, you know, about whatever it is that's arising. So that curiosity starts to build energy. And then that energy goes into joy, you know, because there's something joyful about being able to just be present and being with whatever's arising and investigating it. So the energy produces joy. Joy leads into tranquility, you know, so you start to get more settled, the mind starts to get collected, and you start to feel into tranquility. And you might have had tastes of this during the retreat. So these are just keep on watering these seeds, because this is what leads to liberation. This is the path to liberation. Tranquility leads into deeper states of concentration, which we're saying is the collected mind, the gathered mind, right? So that's another pathway into it. Keeps on these little, these, each of these build into the next and help it grow. And then we have equanimity, you know, the ability to be at peace with things, with conditions just as they are. Letting go. Letting go, because this is the path of letting go. So we cultivate these different factors of awakening. In our practice, we're doing that, right? We're cultivating the practice of mindfulness. We're cultivating, we've been talking about investigation. The energy that's produced from this, you may have already felt that investigation does lead to more energy. You know, when you get more curious about the subtleties of what's happening, that produces interest and that produces energy. The joy just from practice, you know, from being alive, from being in nature, from feeling the breath, from being in the body, all of these subtleties of joy. You know, sometimes it's very subtle joy, and sometimes it could be, you know, you feel a real sense of joy. So there's all different textures of joy that you can experience. the calm, you know, calm abiding, breathing in calm, letting the body settle, the nervous system settle, calm. It's a beautiful way of invitation into the body and the mind. So you're cultivating calm through this practice of mindfulness and meditation. And then the collecting, the concentration is when everything gets collected. The heart, the mind, the body, everything clicks and you gets collected. And you've come into a mind state where it's, where they call it concentration, but it's not the kind of concentration that we're used to thinking of, where you're putting your mind and trying to memorize information. But this is a concentration that comes from this joy of being in a body, embodiment, the joy of breathing, of being embodied. There's a certain joy that arises. And then the mind and the body and the heart click and come together. And the equanimity is so important, right? To have equanimity. And we're cultivating equanimity, right? Because sometimes conditions are not what we want them to be. So equanimity holds you. No matter what the conditions are, we're kind of steady. We're steady there. We're holding the heart steady. We're not tilting over to craving or aversion. We're keeping the heart steady, knowing that conditions are as they are. That the future, we don't know what it is, but yet we can stay steady and know that we have a steady heart, we have a steady presence, that we're coming back into our sacred pause, right? And that we could face whatever comes in our future, moment by moment, because we have a practice that brings us back into presence. So we can trust that, and we can cultivate this beautiful quality of equanimity to be with things as they are. So those are the seven factors of awakening, and those are to know how the conditions are for them to arise, watering those seeds so they keep on growing, and that's part of the practice, right? Investigating how these things arise in our experience. So, taking another pause, how's the weather inside? How's your body? Just being with whatever's happening in your mind, in your heart. Are you aware you're sitting? Can you feel your body? Ah, check in. Me too. So, equanimity, letting go of things that cause us suffering, and watering those seeds that lead to liberation. This is the fourth foundation. Can we let go of those things, those mental tracks that we've created that continue on and take us further into suffering? Can we let them go, knowing that we have this practice where we come back into presence, this moment right here, right now? We always can come back with the breath, back to this embodied presence, and then from that place of clarity, of that clear water, wisdom can arise, compassion can arise from that clear water, right? So just noticing when the mind doesn't have pulling and pushing, and it's just this calm and clarity, soak it in. When you feel that and you're in that presence, soak it in. Even if it's for a minute, recognize it. Let it soak in. And that's the presence that we keep on coming back to. Coming back to that sacred pause that we can take any time of the day in our lives outside. And here on retreat, what's happening? How's my heart? What's happening in my mind? Where's the body at? Just checking in, taking a deep breath. I'm home. In the here and the now, I have arrived. I'm home. Just a few words from great Thai master Ajahn Chah. I don't know the exact wording of it, but he was saying, well, if you want a little bit of happiness, you can let go a little bit. If you want a lot of happiness, you have to let go of a lot. If you want complete happiness, you have to let go completely. So let's just sit for a moment and let the words settle. Thank you for your practice.